streaming at you live from their hidden location in their secret lair 10 miles off the beaches of the Emerald Coast. Chimichanga Talk, brought to you by Beach Bum Comics, with your host, Deadpool Speaks, and the Great Wang!
So I'd like to welcome everybody, and Beach Bum Comics brings you Chimichanga Talk with me, Deadpool Speaks, and with me as always is the Great Wang.
And hello, everybody.
There you go. There you go. We're waiting for you, Wang. So right before we get to our wonderful guest today, I did want to go ahead and introduce the Great Wang. This is actually going to be the first time we're going to be working together. And I'm really curious about how someone gets the name The Great Wang.
Many years ago, it seemed like a good career choice to go into the magician field. And after a few weeks, I realized not the best career choice. Apparently, I was making the wrong people disappear, and the cutting the real lady in half probably sealed my fate as a failed magician. So basically,
you took magic to the other level. So
I took magic to the next level and failed miserably. So since then, I've become somewhat of a movie guru, as well as into comic books and everything else. So.
Oh,
as a failed magician, just became a nerd, I guess, is all you can say.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. And actually, I heard they did downgrade your name from the Marvelous Wang to just the Great One.
I lost the copyright on that one. We went to the Supreme Court, and I was shot down. Another failed example. But, you know, it's all ancient history, but the name stuck.
There you go. And the Great Wang, everybody, round of applause for failure. And moving on, with us today we have actually a great man, and not like the Great Wang, but an actual success, if you will. We have Bobby Nash, and Bobby Nash is actually was on Cobras, and I am talking about Cobras from like G.I. Joe's Most Wanted list. If anybody got a chance to check out his Facebook, and if you haven't, I'll give you a second to check that out. You could pause this recording. I mean, this is the internet. You can do whatever you want and be whoever you want, right, Great Wang?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, a little quicker there on the. So, but either way, he was at Dragon Con, and he obviously got taken hostage by Cobra. And Bobby, thank you so much for being on here. I want you to tell us a little bit more about that, if you can, just because it's such a great picture. If you haven't seen it yet on his Facebook, you can go ahead and check it out. Great Bobby Nash.
Thanks so much for having me.
No, it's always a pleasure.
And you know, think of it this way, Wang. You didn't fail too much because they didn't change your name to the Lousy Wang.
Ah, yes, indeed.
So you know,
thank you, Bobby.
Silver lining to everything. And
I'm still
yes,
great. I'm not lousy, not marvelous, but just great.
Just great. Yeah, I survived Dragon Con. As you can tell, the voice is a little strained, but yeah. But that's okay. Last year I couldn't talk at all when I came home, so I consider this a step up. It's five days of me running my mouth, you know. So
I can only imagine.
Did a lot of panels, including the G.I. Joe panel you mentioned, which was fantastic. Standing room only. It was just amazing. The crowd was wonderful. Yes, as you noticed from the photos, we had a lot of people in costume. Came up to the panel, and so we did a little photo op at the end, and it was part of the American Sci-Fi Classics track, which basically handles shows that are older, I think, than the year 2000.
Oh.
So, topics 2000 and back excuse me, are
yeah, it would be pretty much fair game. Beyond. It would be 2000 and below, I guess.
Yeah, and below, yeah. Phantom Troublemaker, the gentleman wearing the luchador mask in the photos, yes. He was actually hosting the panel. Phantom, I've known Phantom for a few years. He's actually one of the co-hosts on the Earth Station Who and sometimes sits in on the Earth Station One podcast, which I co-host. So,
tell me more about that. You know, I've had the chance of sitting down and listening to this podcast, which occurs every Monday. And it's a great podcast for all you geeks out there wanting to know everything there is to know about, you know, different geekery, I guess. And, you know, we use that proudly. It's not we've taken it back. It's no longer, you know, we're no longer being held to it as a bad thing. So tell me more about the podcast.
Every week we have a new topic. We pick various, you know, geek and sundry type topics. We also interview people that will come on the show. We've had actors, we've had directors, we have writers, artists, et cetera, people we meet at cons, people that we meet wherever. You know, I've been going through like the, well, I guess we don't have Rolodexes anymore, so going through my contact list and finding all the people I know. And
I don't know about you, Bobby, but I keep my Rolodex full.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, I have to constantly get it supplied with more Rolodex cards. I think I know what I'm talking about, but I really don't. remember my dad had a Rolodex.
Yeah. I had one for a short time, and I found it was just easier to keep it in the computer.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. So we do a lot of that stuff. We do interviews, et cetera, and we have a lot of fun. Yeah, and we pick a different topic each week, and we, you know, run our mouths. It's basically like doing a comic panel every month, every week. Is pretty much how it's probably best described.
And you have a lot of really good opposing views on there. Sometimes. Quite a few times, actually, and on some really good topics, too, as far as movies and different things are concerned. And that's what keeps the show fresh. So it's always really good to check out Mondays, plus you guys stream it.
Yeah, we record on Mondays. It usually goes live on Wednesdays.
Oh.
We edit. So, yeah, you guys just get the good stuff. All the parts where we mess up, yeah, we cut those out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You see, you just ruined it for me. You know, geez, Bobby, I guess you could have gone to the Great Wang show and kind of, like, showed them how they pulled the rabbit out of the hat, huh?
Yeah. It just sounds perfectly live, so who knew you edited it?
Yeah, well, we do. We also, because we are a magazine format show, we don't, you know, we do things out of order because we have the interviews, and so we don't want them to have to just sit there for 2 hours waiting for us to get to their section. So yeah, we do record out of order. I pulled back the curtain.
Movie magic again. There you go. Everything revealed. Yeah. Bobby, I mean, you know, you're like that masked magician guy who used to come on the, you know, speaking of shows in the, you know, 2000s. Remember him?
Uh-huh.
He used to come on Fox or something.
Showed how all the tricks were done, yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oddly enough, here's your nice Dragon Con tie. You remember that was hosted by Mitch Pileggi from The X-Files?
Yes.
He was a Dragon Con guest this past weekend.
Uh-huh. Good to know. Good to know if I had a way of going into the past and checking them out. I wasn't there, unfortunately, this year, but I heard that it was crazy.
Yeah, there's. If you've never been to Dragon Con, calling it a convention is probably not the most accurate of descriptions. There are all different types of conventions. For those who have gone, will know. You know, there's some that are kind of the trade show feel. It's all in one booth. It all happens during the day. At night, everybody goes their separate ways. Mm-hmm. You know, you come back, you're there from, you know. And those are fun shows. Absolutely love those shows. Dragon Con is basically a citywide convention. It takes place over 5 hotels. We take over the Peachtree Center Mall food court. It is in the America's Mart, which is a couple of big buildings, which is like convention and open space. We also have we have a parade which takes over several streets of downtown. We have events at the Turner Field and the aquarium. So basically, Dragon Con takes over the city.
That's crazy. It's some people think, well, you know, the San Diego Comic-Con is crazy, but I didn't realize there was so much involved in Dragon Con. I'm only like 5 hours away.
It's very unique in terms of how not only how it's run, but it's of the focus of it. I mean, when you go to San Diego, you know, San Diego is probably the one it gets compared to the most because they're the big, they're both very huge shows, but they're very different in focus. You know, the trade show type shows, you know, that's where it's, they're very industry driven. You know, the guest that are in Hall H on in San Diego, they're promoting stuff that's coming out now. You know, that's what they're there for. And that's generally who's there. And again, that's great. I love that stuff. So I don't want to sound like I'm putting that down. But Dragon Con is focused on the fans.
Well, there you go. And I mean, if there's any angry letters, please direct them to Bobby Nash.
Yes. absolutely. No, I absolutely adore the San Diego Comic Con and would go every year if I could afford it. But Dragon Con is definitely a fan-centric show. There are guests there from new shows. They had a nice contingent of people from Arrow.
Yes.
They had a nice contingent of people from Warehouse 13, Defiance, Walking Dead, shows like that that are on the air now. There's some Game of Thrones guests, et cetera, et cetera. So I mean, there's still a lot of that. But then you also had Ed Asner was a guest.
Oh, right. Nice.
We had a couple of classic Doctor Who actors. Sylvester McCoy and Peter Davison were there. Lee Majors and Lindsay Wagner were there.
Lee Majors?
Yes.
Wow.
$6 million man.
Yeah, so you get guys like that, you know, Richard Hatch or Lou Ferrigno. So it's a nice mix.
Yeah, I have a curious question. I wonder how much the $6 million man is worth in today's money. I mean, would... you'd have to think of both sides of it. I mean, there's the fact that they took a whole bunch of technology and fitted him with it, and with Obamacare and everything else. I mean, would he be maybe the $2,500,000 man, or would it go the other way where he just couldn't afford it? And I mean, you know, we probably couldn't afford to rebuild him.
The original $6 million man, when he was built, he wasn't video capable. And then they put a VHS player in his right thigh back in 1983 so he could air video. But I don't know what they've done since. I don't know if they've upgraded him.
I think they upgraded him to Betamax. And that was just a terrible idea. But then they moved him up to Laserdisc.
Oh. Okay.
So, and then HD DVD. But it's.
I actually said it on a panel about $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman that, and questions like that were asked, that if they were to do it today or reboot the franchise, what would they do? It seemed the consensus was that they would just ignore that the dollar amount and would just go to call it him the Bionic Man.
Bionic Man. Yeah, because, you know, when you're worth $6 million, I mean, there's certain neighbors you couldn't probably walk down just because they'd tear you apart for the pieces and leave you on blocks. And it happens. I've seen it. So do you know where Dragon Con got its name, Bobby?
I have no idea. Yeah. I've been going for a long time, and that's something, you know, I have no idea. And
that's something that just nobody, you know, nobody asks. It's like the one question, you know, you don't talk about Fight Club, you know. It's like,
yeah,
you
just, it's just something I've never actually given it a whole lot of thought. But I'll have to find out now. You got me curious.
Well, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, Dragon Con, and, you know, I mean, there's not a whole lot of dragons.
Well, there were this year.
Well.
With Game of Thrones being
Game of Thrones, yeah, I would figure when you said that, but
were there a lot of Khaleesi's running around up there?
Yeah, there was a lot of them. Right? there were a lot of people And I am not that familiar with Game of Thrones. I don't have HBO, so I am way behind on having seen these. But I do know the guy that Jason Momoa, who was on Stargate. I know there's, you know, he runs around shirtless and he's like painted. It's like, and I saw a lot of people walking around painted.
Right.
And
right.
And I saw a lot of the white haired girl with the dragon eggs.
Yeah.
Augustus. Yes.
That would be Khaleesi. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, she has the dragons.
Hmm. Yeah. So I knew she was the girl with the dragons, but I wasn't sure what her name was. But yeah, definitely lots of costumes of those, and yeah, it's definitely a costume heavy show. I mean, there are people that, you know, I mean, they really get into it, and we're there. I mean, I arrived on Thursday. The convention technically doesn't start until Friday afternoon, as I understand it. There were people there as early as Tuesday. Already getting into the spirit of things.
In costume or just hanging?
Yes, in costume.
Wow, that's dedication. You got to admire that.
And it's a 24 hour a day con. There's stuff going on around the clock. Now the things like the dealer's room and the Walk of Fame and all that stuff does close. You know, but so those people that are working can get out and enjoy the convention. But, yeah, there is stuff going on 24 hours a day, so you don't sleep a lot.
Oh, well, I guess it's kind of like New Orleans, but just a lot more normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've heard a lot of people who go have referred to it as Nerdy Gras.
Nerdy Gras. Nice. That's forever going to stick.
Yeah.
I saw they had, like, a superhero run where people were, like, doing I don't know if it was a 5K, but they were dressed as Superman and Batman doing a whole run out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's always stuff like that. Every year there's also, they do, because they're behind the Hilton, which is one of the hotels, there is just a massive concrete set of stairs. It's huge. And every year that becomes photo op central. And so what they do is they say, okay, at 2:00 we're going to have a DC Comics costume photo shoot.
Oh, yeah,
so
I saw that.
Everybody that brought a DC Comics costume puts it on, goes out there, and you get 300 people in DC costumes for a big photo shoot. Last year, George Perez is usually a guest at the show. And last year, they basically did the cosplay version of the Crisis cover with the death of Supergirl. And George played the role of Superman. He was standing there holding a Supergirl cosplayer and screaming up at the heavens while he was surrounded by all of these DC characters.
That's
quite
fantastic.
Amazing picture. Yeah.
That is fantastic.
But then they do that for different topics, too. It's, you know, 2:00 we're going to do all the DC. You know, 1:00 we're going to do all the Marvel. At 3:00, you know, all the Star Trek people, and et cetera, et cetera.
At 4:00, we'll do everybody who didn't bring a costume.
Exactly.
Which is like five people.
It's like five people, yeah. That was those of us that are working the convention and don't have time to change costumes, so we just, dressed normally.
Yeah, that would be at like around 9 or 10 o'clock when you close your booth and you can have a chance to breathe. They get you out there for a picture, and you all look very tired. It's confused for the zombie picture.
Well, you know, the Walking Dead, that's really the convention on Monday evening.
Oh, no. Nice. Now, let's talk about Fight Card. Just because, first of all, you said it was kind of out of your norm.
Well, Fight Card, it's pulpy kind of drama, and it's fight fiction, basically. I mean, the story has to revolve around boxing.
Exactly.
And I know a little about boxing, so I had to do some research.
Oh. But, I mean, I had the pleasure of reading the book, and, you know, which you can get it on Amazon. You get it off your website. And it's different than your other work.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Oh, thank you.
And I really enjoyed it. Now, and when you – I laughed when you said you had to do a lot of research. And the thing is because I can tell that you really looked into your stuff. You know, just by reading it, and it has that really good feel, that pulp feel that you were talking about. And it's done really well for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I – you know, I mean, I try to research as much as I can, you know, there comes a point where you just have to go, okay, here's where I make stuff up to make it work.
Yeah.
Or take, you know, take reality and ignore it because it doesn't fit what I need. But yeah, with this story being, it's all set in the past. It's, you know, there's no supernatural monster to fight. There's everything in this story is a, you know, it's one of those grounded in reality stories.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's a point of making sure you understand what winter in Chicago is, or understanding, you know, when winter starts in Chicago and in, you know, things like that. Or, you know, I grow up in Georgia, so I know Georgia. So I try to set these things in places that I know. But for Fight Card, the biggest thing for me was, well, I learned a little boxing terms and things like that, but was researching Korea, because mm-hmm. the title character does end up in the Korean War.
Yeah.
And I've never been to Korea. So, and certainly not during the war, a little before my time. And really, most, you know, like probably most of your listeners, what I know about the Korean War came from MASH. So
right. What kind of listeners do you think I have?
Oh.
I mean, and it's interesting because, you know, like I said, it's what you call, I guess, a period novel.
Yes.
And it's told in such a way where you don't necessarily have to be familiar with boxing or familiar, you know, with the Korean War, but it's really good as far as, like I said, if you can compare it to your other work, and like you said, yeah, it's, you're not fighting something mythical or anything. It's the struggle. It's like an internal struggle with him.
Yeah, yeah, and there's really, you're not, there are no, like, weapons fired until, like, the end of the book, which for me is unusual.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah, it's, but really, I mean, at the heart of it, it is a drama. It is very much the story of this scrawny kid and how he starts from his poor upbringing, you know, in Georgia. And by poor, I mean they had no money, no food, that kind of thing.
Did you want to write this story to kind of challenge yourself to go off in an area where you were unfamiliar with? Was that kind of your goal?
I didn't really think about it in that term. I was invited to do a Fight Card story. So, and I was like, well, let me see if I can come up with a story. And then when the story came, you know, I didn't want to force a story. And so as I'm thinking, ooh, I got to do something boxing. And when you're doing a boxing story, the immediate story ideas you get are the ones that get done a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, the first one is someone wants him to take a dive, or he owes someone money who wants him to take a dive. The other is, you know, the other is the Rocky story, the underdog, you know, and then the or his girl wants him to quit boxing, but he can't. So those are the first that come to mind. So those are the first ones I says, if I'm going to do this, I want to do something a little different.
Different, yeah. And you could really feel that. You could, when you're reading this, it like I said, it doesn't feel like a boxing novel. You don't have to be a boxing fan to get into it.
Right. Right, because my character, and this is a minor spoiler, but my character in this is not, yes, he doesn't go out and become a professional boxer.
Mm-hmm.
Boxing is something he learns to fight when he's younger. You know, and it's called boxing, and then, you know, or it's called fighting. He learns how to fight to protect himself. Later, he learns how to take that fighting skill and make it, in, you know, and boxing helps him learn to control that, what he learned, you know, those survival skills. And then when he gets to Korea, those two things help him just survive the war.
So pretty much what you did, Bobby, was take Star Wars and turn it into a boxing novel. And no, I'm just playing, Bobby. No,
you got me thinking now.
Well, you know, no, but they say like every great story just has that whole thing. But that's where it's different. It's he took a skill that he used as a survival technique and developed it into a way to. Not necessarily as much survive in life, but, well, I mean, yeah, it is in life, but not to survive life itself, but to survive in life.
Right,
So, and I was really curious. Now, you put there writing as Jack Tunney.
Mm-hmm.
So, why the anonymity? Well, I mean, it's kind of anonymity, but it really isn't, because he put a novel by Bobby Nash, and then in parentheses, writing as Jack Tunney.
That's Fight Car's little homage to, like, a lot of the pulp stuff of the past. When you look at a lot of the old pulps, you know, they seem to all be written by the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And they really weren't. They had house names, and that's what people wrote under. And that's why sometimes you see some of these old pulp novels that have the same byline, but they read completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost seems like someone different wrote it. It's because someone different wrote it. So Fight Card does that. Fight Card's house name is Jack Tunney. And so that's, you know, that's their thing, where all Fight Cards are written by Jack Tunney. But they've not hidden the fact that it's, you know, who's writing that.
Exactly.
It's really a nod to the past. The cover on the ebook, you know, just has Jack Tunney, and then on the inside it has my name. Now, there is a paperback version which will be out probably in a week or two, and it'll actually have my name on the cover of the paperback.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Yeah. Actually, you're the first place I've announced that outside of the convention, so there you go.
Woo, look
There's
at that.
Your exclusive, yeah.
There you go. Chimichanga first. And, you know, I thought that would sound a lot cooler. So
that's the chimichanga special of the day.
There you go. Wow, you just got a tagline, and I just stole it. So
it's yours.
There you go, Bobby. You're the best. Let me ask you something, Bobby. You've been branching out, so you've done comics, novels, and now you're also branching out into film. You've had little cameos before, and now you're going to go ahead and start working on this horror film called Fat Chance. Tell me about that.
That's going to be a very exciting and interesting experiment for me. I've done the background stuff, and that requires a little bit of acting skill, but not a lot. You know, really, it's stand over there and look like you're reading. Okay. this one, I actually have lines to learn. You know, I have directions to follow and all that stuff. I've never thought of myself as an actor, so I'm curious to see how this is going to go. I hope I don't make a complete fool of myself. It was very weird. I did the audition. I had to audition for it. I know the guys that are putting it together. I've known Daniel Emery Taylor and Jim O'Rear for several years now. They're both actors, and they get out and they do a lot of projects, and they got together and did a horror movie called The Hospital that came out either last year or earlier this year, they did it to rave reviews, and it's a very, you know, dark and disturbing movie, but they got a lot of good reviews, so they started putting together Fat Chance, which Daniel wrote a few years back. And based on the success of The Hospital, they were able to get this one funded and going. And so I was asked to audition, so I did some auditions, and they picked me for the character of Clark.
Now, can you give us a little background on this film, or like a synopsis on it?
Yeah. Basically, it's going to be kind of a throwback to like the 80s kind of, you know, slasher flick. So there's going to be a lot of humor in it as well.
That's great.
It's called Fat Chance. Basically, it is there's a reality show called By the Pound, which is one of those weight loss reality shows. And they are filming. They have these contestants out in a state park out in the middle of nowhere, where they're cut off from reality for however long to handle this. And then as it progresses, they keep disappearing. But then, like, they're leaving in the middle of the night, and disappearing, and comes to find out they're actually just being all murdered.
Oh.
And so you have to follow through as someone is going around killing all of the contestants on this show. So.
Now, since it's a throwback to a lot of those, like 80s slasher hacker films, is there going to be a lot of TNA? I have to ask because,
I can announce that Daniel and Jim recently just announced that Brie Olsen, who is a former playmate and former porn star, is in the movie. So that probably answered that question. So yes, there will be. Yes, it's definitely going to be an R-rated movie.
So definitely she got casted for her acting chops.
Absolutely. we're expecting Academy Award nominations for her.
At least.
But it should be a lot of fun. They've got there's going to be some notable horror. Horror actors who are going to make small appearances in it as well. So it should be a fun time.
That sounds great actually. Cause with a lot of the throwbacks and Sci-Fi Network's been doing a lot of, these spoofy, campy kind of horror films, but most of them revolve around, mutated animals like Sharknado,
mm-hmm.
which I hear is hitting a big screen somewhere near you, just because, so many people went on an uproar for these films that just right away when you told me that it's based off of a reality show to lose weight and the film's called Fat Chance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is definitely going to be, right up a lot of people's alleys.
The tagline for the early notices had under Fat Chance. It said they're dying to get thin.
Nice.
So, but speaking of Sharknado, since you mentioned that, someone at Dragon Con did make a Sharknado costume.
Oh, wow.
It was like the tornado costume, and they were inside of it, and there were little rubber sharks around it. So, yeah, Google that. You'll find, I saw, some of the photos today. It's hilarious.
Sharknado. You see, that's the thing. You don't understand the kind of creativity it takes or the sheer – there's two ends of that spectrum. Either this person is an absolute genius who created the Sharknado, or he just has absolutely no clue and just randomly tossed at something because, they told him, okay, we got deadline in 10 minutes. All right, let's take a tornado, let's take a shark, and let's put them together.
Well, I think they've got those. Remember the old dice that would have like words on them, and you'd roll both of them and put those words together. I think a lot of those type of movies are made by doing that. It's like, okay, what have we got today? We've got ghost and shark. Ghost shark, let's go. Okay,
let's go.
We've got super eel. That's yours. So
got elephant tsunami.
Yeah.
Too soon? No, that would work.
Yeah.
I don't know, they never forget.
God bless them, though. I mean, people watch the movies, I mean, we all make fun of them, but people watch them.
Well, you know what? It actually takes me back to the Rocky Horror Picture Show, okay? Because the Rocky Horror Picture Show, a lot of people, when they first saw it, they were like, what is this? This is garbage, da-da-da, this and that. But then you had those small few that could, enjoy it for what it was, which is it's just something fun, and it was a great musical. And then you had people start, yelling at the screen, and suddenly it became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it has never died. And to this day, there's still places out there. It doesn't have to be Halloween. That come midnight on a Saturday night, they're playing Rocky Horror Picture Show, and there's a whole bunch of people in the front singing along and drag.
The plaza here in Atlanta does it pretty regular. I don't know how many times a year. There is a Rocky Horror Picture Show event at Dragon Con every year.
There you go.
There's another reason to go right there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Get in line early. The line to get into Rocky Horror every year wraps around a complete city block.
I can only imagine, So, yeah, you don't have to dream it. You have to be it to be in there. Mm-hmm. So, but, it just goes to show, it's like and that was without trying. I mean, they just put this together. It was kind of like a love for this, you know, for musicals and a love for everything else. And then when they tried to do a sequel to it, you know, Shock Treatment, which I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with, they tried to create pauses for people to yell stuff at the screen.
Right.
And it didn't do as well, you know, because they tried too hard.
Yeah.
But,
right, because yeah, they're trying to tell the they're trying to coax the audience into a reaction instead of just getting a reaction.
Exactly, yeah. And you know you can't force that. And I mean this film Fat Chance sounds like it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I've read the script. The script is pretty funny. So yeah, I'm excited to be a part of, I mean, you know, I'm a small part of it, but I'm excited to be part of it. I go down, I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday. I drive down on Friday and start filming on Saturday, so.
You are.
Hopefully this voice thing will have cleared up by then.
You are a busy man, and then you got a con the following weekend, don't you? You like a small con that you're doing?
That's later in the month. It's a couple, still a few weeks away. Yeah, it's the 29th in Warner Robins, which is in South Georgia.
All right.
So yeah, it's a one day show. It's on. I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe it's Sunday the 29th.
Fantastic, and you'll obviously have that information on your website.
Yeah, it's on my website now. Yeah.
And all right, so let me ask you this. Now, you know, you're just getting back from Dragon Con, everything else. You've been a busy man. And one thing that we did want to bring up, and actually, Wang, since you're better at the whole movie thing, big movie news recently, we had the casting for 50 Shades of Grey. Now, come on now, Bobby. You're like, okay, like this.
I haven't heard this. I don't know who they've cast.
Oh.
So I'm going to learn something here.
This is great. I mean, you know, you being a novelist and having the success that you have, and I mean, the person who wrote 50 Shades of Grey was, you know, they published it online, and you know, it just shot into space, just how popular this thing got. And you know, it's funny because a lot of people call it like lady porn. And you know, being a guy, you know, you always try to get into the mindset of women. Mm-hmm. So you know, I read the book, and you know, it hurt to read. I didn't get into it. I'm sorry. I'm not I wasn't much of a fan. Have you read it, Bobby?
I have not. No.
Okay. Well, you know, it's good for you because you still have that part of your life. that I unfortunately lost.
You know what? The author of that book, though, they get that success we all want. So we want people to buy the books.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and Wang, did you read it?
No, it was. I kind of got into it at the beginning, but it didn't bite my fancy. I guess, you know. Let's just say, I've read more exciting in the past, but I could understand how the housewives really got into it if they're sitting at home or, you know, they're just, you know, women seem to go nuts for it. And, I mean, I could understand why. You know, almost a fantasy world for them is what it basically entailed.
And you know, it's and the funny thing is it's more about bondage and it's to have like a whole bunch of housewives say, well, you know, this seems so erotic, and it's kind of degrading for women. I mean, in my opinion, and like I said, there's some people who have different views of this, but you know, I mean, it's a huge book, so they finally cast this movie. And, you know, there's been all sorts of rumors, but they finally came out yesterday and they finally said, hey, we're casting this movie. And, Wang, who did they say they were casting?
The female part is going to be Dakota Johnson, who is Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith's kid. She had parts in The 5-Year Engagement and 21 Jump Street. And then she was in The Social Network, the girl – if I remember the scene, wasn't she the girl with Justin Timberlake wearing the skimpy underwear?
Well, yeah, I could see how they casted her for this then. No, but you're right, which is, you know, she hasn't had a lot of film time. But, you know, it's actually interesting, you know, it's interesting that they casted her for this. And then the real interesting part as well is who they casted as the Mr. Gray, the main character, Christian Gray, which is this gentleman from Pacific Rim.
Yeah, that's Charlie Hunnam. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. He does Sons of Anarchy.
Exactly. So they casted him, which, you know, if anybody's read the books, I mean, you know that this Mr. Gray character is supposed to be an older man, and she's supposed to be just out of college, like interning for him, and you know she's you know, sexually inexperienced, like most women coming out of college. You know,
from a creative standpoint, I think the interesting thing is how they adapt this book, because, you know, in this day and age of PG-13 films, I know they probably have to make this R, but, you know, we grew up in an era, or I did, maybe I'm older than you guys, but, I mean, I remember the controversy around 9.5 weeks, you know, everybody was like, oh, it's so dark and it's so over the top. The difference is now we have the book first that everybody's read, and then they have to try to adapt this to film, but not to create. I think now they don't want to create that controversy. I mean, you being an author, Bobby, I mean, you know, it's a fine line between, you know, creating controversy for show and then actually going, oh, wow, we didn't mean to create that controversy. You
yeah.
kind of understand what I mean?
I do. You're, yeah. Well, you know, they say there's no bad publicity, you know, which I guess, you know, controversy does make people check stuff out. But I also think, too, that not only that the audience has changed, that the type of movies we get now have changed. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be that this type of material, you know, back when 9.5 weeks came out, it was kind of scandalous because that's not the kind of stuff we normally talk about in public or we show in public. You know, we kind of
right.
We didn't go that far. And now, you know, with, you know, I watch shows on cable, you know, on like broad, like regular cable, basic cable, that certainly are show and do more than 9.5 weeks ever did.
Well, I guess we're always pushing the boundaries of how far mm-hmm. we can take something.
Right. So it just depends on how they film the movie. You know, I mean, that's really the hard part is going to be for them to capture the feel of the book. Now, I don't know exactly. Like I said, I've not read it, so I don't know how the book is presented and what if it's from her point of view or if it's just from different point of views. But yeah, it's going to depend on how they film it. To see if they can capture, you know, because when you read a book, you feel the, you know, you usually connect with a character, and you kind of follow that character through, and that character becomes your point of view of the entire world that's in this book. And with a movie, a lot of times that changes because, you know, well, instead of just following one character around, we can see what other characters are doing when they're not around, and
exactly,
so, yeah, so yeah.
You know, sometimes I feel that that's exactly the problem with, like, a lot of Stephen King films. You know, if you've ever read Stephen King, you know, he's extremely descriptive, and, you know, you have people that either love him or hate him. Mm-hmm. But then his movies come around, and a lot of people get really disappointed because of the fact that it's real difficult to take his, you know, his books and then kind of really piece it together really well because he tells so much in the story.
A good recent example, I watched the movie Paranoia, and the movie
exactly.
is, there's not much, you know, to be a thriller, there's no tension or any of the suspense in the movie. But the book, however, has a lot of that. So, yeah, so when they translate to the movie, the suspense part really didn't take. And so I think it kind of hurt the movie. So they may have been able to do different things. So it's tough. I mean, it's tough to do that, you know, no matter what. I mean, you know, I write, you know, when I write my mystery thriller novels, you know, you have to put in clues and you have to set suspense and you have to all these things and hide identities and things to, you know, because if you tell just the reader up front, oh, this is the killer, by the way, and, you know, you have to drag all that out and you have to lay in the groundwork and drop the clues. And it's tough. I mean, especially because I already know who the killer is. So I'm dropping clues thinking that there's like a neon sign pointing at him going, this is the killer, by the way, early in the book. So, yeah, it's very tough to keep that suspense going. And because you also don't want your audience bored.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want your audience going like, this is predictable. So those are things, and it's tough. I mean, it's tough to not be predictable. You know, every type of story that can be told has been told. And so it as a creator, you have to come up with different ways of telling the same story. Kind of like what you were talking about with the boxing and the fight card earlier. Mm-hmm. It's different ways to tell that kind of story. And, yeah, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, hopefully they'll find something that's successful for them.
Now, Wang, this question is directed towards you. Now, you're a resident, you know, film guru buff. Now, let me ask you this. If you were to shoot this in such a way where you can get it across to an audience, where you could make it interesting and fascinating, what would you do to present this story?
Well, from a creative standpoint, I think the movie takes place mainly around two characters. I think you have to, on film, that's great in a book, but I think they're going to have to add more characters. And I think the first thing you do with the lead female character being Don Johnson's daughter, I think you have a couple of 60-year-old guys living next door to the couple who are ex-Miami cops. You know, one white guy, one African-American gentleman, and, you know, they wear their alligator shoes and hang out on their boat. That would be kind of interesting.
Now, hang out on their boat. Now, you know, I don't think this takes place anywhere near water, but obviously these two would have a boat located somewhere on their property where they would obviously be hanging out all the time, correct?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and they still wear the patel, you know, the pastel colors from 1985. So they, you know, basically they're the same characters they were on Miami Vice.
Yeah, they have the boat parked in the driveway, and they have a swimming pool, one of those little tiny wading pools with a couple of fish in it so they can fish off the boat.
And, yeah, that would only be stuck on the front part of the bow of the boat.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't seem that weird to the neighbors. But
and they're keeping a lookout for Sharknado, by the way.
You see, that's how you sell the film. This is the kind of film I would go see, you know, especially for Don Johnson. You know, bless him since he's come back. You know, I say he's come back, but really he made the appearance in Django Unchained.
Django. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. And when I saw him, you know, Big Daddy, I'm like, wait a minute, that's Don Johnson. I was like, what?
Oh yeah, and he did Machete too.
Yeah, he did that. You know, I try to forget a lot of the things that Lindsay Lohan's in, but you know, Machete, man, and they're coming out with another one.
Yeah,
and this one has Michelle Rodriguez is in it, and. You know, I don't care what she's in. She's fantastic. She should have won an Academy Award for something by now.
Yeah. yes, I've seen her in person because I was an extra on Three Stooges. And, you know, she's one of the villains in the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
So I got to watch her work. Yeah, I got to watch her work for a couple of hours, and she is hilarious.
Well, and, you know, I'm not the only one obsessed with Don Johnson. We know Bobby's a big fan of Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. So, you know, with that being said, you know, we all like a Don Johnson.
That's a good guilty pleasure movie. You know, for strictly personal reasons, I really loved Nash Bridges, you know.
Which isn't far from that character.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like Fringe, kind of alternate universe type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Don Johnson definitely needs to be in more movies. Actually, I'm hoping they'll cast him in the Batman Superman film as I don't care who. But I go see it. I mean, you know, they're casting everybody in that movie. You know, they got Ben Affleck. Obviously, since now they got Breaking Bad's Bryan Cranston in there, and he as Lex Luthor. Like we didn't see that coming, but yeah. You know, and yeah. So he's. I'm really excited for that. What are your feelings on that, Bobby? I'm just curious.
On the Ben Affleck part or just the Batman Superman in general?
Batman and Superman in general. Everybody knows how you probably feel about Ben Affleck, but.
Yeah, you know, I hope it's good. I enjoyed, for the most part, Man of Steel. I had my problems with it, but for the most part, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. All of the early, when I would see just photos, before they had released any trailers or anything, the photos from Man of Steel, I was not excited. The photos just did. I'm like, there's nothing in this makes me think Superman. Mm-hmm. Then I watched I saw some trailers and I felt a little better, but I'm still kind of. Then I watched the movie and Henry Cavill really sold me as Superman. I have some problems with the story. You know, things I'm wondering why they did, but you know, for the most part, yes, he sold me seeing him. And there's a few different, there's like two or three scenes that really just made me go, okay, I buy him as Superman now. And bringing Batman in, you know, and granted, Batman is basically the guest star in this next movie.
Yeah.
He's, you know, we don't know how much he's realistically going to be in there. It's part of their plans to set up a Justice League movie.
Mm-hmm.
We actually talked about this on. I was on a panel at DragonCon where we were talking about Arrow, the TV series Arrow.
Uh huh.
And that was one of the things that was brought up was about because they're introducing the Flash in this new season.
Yes.
In the attempt to spin the Flash off into his own show. And people were wondering, you know, are these going to be two separate universes or? Are they planning to have Flash and Arrow from TV as part of the Justice League? So there's a lot. We don't really know what they're doing yet, but it looks like they're laying groundwork to build that bigger world. And I'm sure after this Superman Batman movie, I have no doubt that they're going to spin Affleck off into his own Batman movie.
Exactly.
I can't see them not doing it. I mean, because. Really, Batman is their cash cow in terms of movies. You know?
And a lot of people forget. It's like a lot of people give Affleck a bad name because of Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, I mean, you know, if you look at Daredevil, he did a pretty good job in it. I'm not going to say it was the greatest job in the world, but...
Well, he's grown since then, too. He is a much better actor today than he was then.
Exactly.
You know, he's learned a lot. And... Some people, some actors, and I think he's falling into this category. They mm-hmm. once they get older, you know, he stops being the pretty boy actor and he becomes like, you know, I don't know how to say this, I guess, but he kind of grows into now it's not what he looks like, it's the fact that ooh, he's an actor, you know.
Yeah, he's building out of that George Clooney kind of like when George Clooney was first the pretty boy kind of like, you know, didn't have any serious chops, and then as he got older and as his films grew, he grew more and more respected.
He kind of establishes himself as and he's doing these, I think, because he's doing these projects that shows more than just that shows more of his acting skill as opposed to just what he looks like with Argo and things like that. And we know he can direct, and he's done some pretty good directing jobs. I admit when I first heard he had been cast as Batman, my initial reaction was really, you know, that guy. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because I have been wrong before. And regardless of whether I like it or not, it's going to happen. So,
exactly. Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure Bobby Nash, they'll call you up and be like, well, are you sure we can go ahead and run with this?
Yeah, I'm waiting for that call. Any minute now.
Any minute now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, we really appreciate you having you on. And one thing that we wanted to do is we're trying out this portion of the show. And we really kind of want to, you know, give you not only the ability to be on our show as a great reward, but
for surviving the convention, that's it. Yeah.
There you go. But we have a segment called Fun with Wang, and it's when you get to play around with Wang a little bit. There's a trick to this, okay? So we're going to give you exactly 45 seconds, okay?
Okay.
45 seconds to answer as many questions that Wang throws at you as possible. Now,
Okay. You
stand the chance of winning something really big, or you stand the chance of going limp and going home. But it's okay, because right now you're already home, so it'll be a short walk.
That's right.
So, now, for this little portion, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Wang, and this is Fun with Wang.
So I'm just going to kind of rapid fire you some questions, Bobby, and if you don't know the answer, just go, I don't know, or if you do, just jump in. So since we were, we'll begin, since we were talking about Batman, and you know comic books, Batgirl was whose daughter?
Commissioner Gordon.
Ah, do you know her name?
Barbara Gordon.
Ah, that's good. On Gilligan's Island, was the professor a high school teacher or a college teacher?
Ooh, I think college.
That is correct. Guess.
Oh, okay, that's a good
correct.
Guess then.
Yeah, very good. In the TV show Eight is Enough from the 1970s, can you name any of the eight children? First name.
One of them was Joey, right? Wasn't that the littlest
Joey.
One?
No Joey.
Oh, then passed.
Multiple
I've seen
did.
The show, right. But it was way back when.
For the listening audience, it was Nicholas, Tommy, Elizabeth, Nancy, Susan, Joni, Mary, and David. So if anybody wants to play at home.
Sorry. Don't mind me.
Do you know the first lyrics for the Facts of Life theme song?
You take the good, you take the bad.
don't right? stop there. Come on.
Oh, no, that's as much singing as I'm going to say.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take the both, and there you have
take them both,
the facts.
And there you have. Yep. I even, for bonus points, do you know who wrote that?
Really?
Yeah. No, Wayne, do you know who wrote that? Come on.
I do not know.
Alan Thicke.
Alan Thicke, are you serious?
Absolutely, yes.
You see, this is why you're only the great Wang, okay?
That's right. I'm not the awesome. I didn't know that. That would have been a follow-up question that he would have gotten. And we'll begin let's see, I've got two more questions here. In the movie The Shining, what room did Jack Nicholson tell Danny to avoid?
Oh, God. This is one I know, but you know, but you don't know.
Right,
so
right.
I'm going to have to
because
pass.
He stares at the door, right.
Right.
Because it was 237, you know.
Thank you.
I would have laughed if it was 227, and then later there was a sitcom called 227. That would be better. And then, since you're a writer and you're also a horror fan, if you were writing a part of a film, what would Michael Myers be doing on October 30th to get ready?
he would be razor blade shopping. Yeah. See, I would of course write the one year he doesn't go, where he's tired and he decides not to go on a rampage, and he just trick or treats and with razor blades and candy. Yeah.
He'll move it to September 1st.
Yeah.
Just to throw everybody off.
Yes, yes. Like, you know what? I'm taking this year off.
Well, couldn't get you to eat me out and said, what does Michael Myers do on November 1st? But we know he just, you know, checks into the Holiday Inn Express and, you know, just sleeps it off. So that's pretty much what he does every November 1st.
October, you know, the day before Halloween, he's having to, like, you know, reclean the Shatner mask. And
he's getting his nails done and, yeah. You know, getting his fro all done up. So.
All froed up.
Yeah. Well, dry cleaning the suit, you know.
Making a list, checking it twice.
That's right. Well, you know, he takes the good, he takes the bad.
He takes them both and hacks them up. So that's awesome. All right, so was that it, Wang? How do you do?
Who's that?
Exactly. And the great Wang.
Oh, yeah, how he did? Let's see. Let me add this up. 8,609 points for Bobby.
Woo!
Yeah.
That is a record high.
That's on a scale of 6 million, so I don't really know how to give a prize out, but we'll do our best. Well,
Bobby, for you and for our wonderful listening audience at home, we do appreciate having you on here. And we don't want you to walk away. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and give you a free Bobby Nash novel. Signed by the author.
So now it's not worth anything because somebody wrote on it.
Well, actually, I did want to say that that's really cool. I know that this is one thing, and I want to plug this for you. On your website, you do offer electronic autographs.
Yes.
For your ebooks, which it's something I've never seen before. Until I saw it on your website, and it's because I don't visit a lot of websites, but no, I'm just saying I think it's a great idea. Did you come up with this?
No, actually, there is a site called Authorgraph, and I found it and said, you know what, this is pretty cool because yeah, people are always saying, well, I can't get ebooks signed, and so yes, so this site was already there. It's a free service, you know. What I basically do is I upload. It's basically like it's the electronic version of a book plate. A lot of times with some authors will do book plate signings for paperback and hardback novels, where it's basically a piece of paper, but usually with some kind of design on it, and the author signs it, and then they mail it to someone, and they just slide it inside the front cover of the book.
Exactly.
You know. This is the electronic version, which is basically it's got the book cover, and you go in and you say, hey, I would like this. You write me a little message, and hey, I would like this. And, you know, if you want it signed to you or just signed or whatever. And then I go through and I can type a little message to you and put it in there. And then I sign it on the screen and email it to you, and you can drop it on your reading device, and there it is.
And there it is.
I have the option available for several books. So
that's great, Bobby. Thank you so much for being on our show. We really appreciate your time. We know that your time is of the essence because you're a busy, busy man. Now, do you have anything in the works? Things that you know our listeners can look forward to?
Oh, absolutely. Well, as I mentioned, Fight Card The Fight Card Barefoot Bones novel will be out in paperback sometime in the next week or so. I do have two new project announcements that the publishers will be announcing in the coming week. So I can't spoil them here, unfortunately. But if you pop by BobbyNash.com, you know, I'll post those there when that information's – of course, on Facebook and – Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. So that's happening. What else? I'm sure there's more, but yeah, that's the those kind of announcements are coming. Of course, Fat Chance is coming, and yeah, just lots of stuff in production. It's been a busy, busy year. I've been a very lucky man.
Exactly, and we're very lucky to have you, Bobby. I really appreciate your time again, like I said. And, you know, if there's anything we could do for you, just go ahead and let us know. And as always, we'll, you know, along with this podcast, you'll be able to find the links to Bobby. Support any way that you can as far as, you know, here's some great stuff for you guys to look at. All right, this is Deadpool Speaks for Beach Bum Comics, and along with me, the great Wang, and as always, the great Bobby Nash. And Bobby,
oh, it's my pleasure.
Jump the gun there, Bobby. You know,
sorry.
Wait till they pat your back before you go ahead and congratulate them. No, but that's exactly why you're as great as you are, Bobby, is because you're always one step ahead of the game. And thank you so much for being on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And, of course, after being on your show now, I'm hungry. I have the urge to go eat some chimichangas.
There you go, because
that's our goal right there.
That's our goal right there for Chimichanga Talk. This is Deadpool Speaks. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening this week. And remember, just like always, we will be back next week with another great guest and more adventures from the land of Chimichanga Talk. So tune in next time, same Deadpool time, same Deadpool channel.
I can just imagine now you guys getting off the podcast, going out and getting in your, like, your taco truck now and running around and playing, you know, to sell chimichangas after the show.
Well, that's my night job.
Oh.
Believe it or not, tacos sell a lot better at night. You can't see what's in them, that's why. Ha 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 ha!